championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside by my man, Darius Terrell. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be going over what just happened in the Alamo Bowl. What did we see? What's the significance of beating Utah to close out the season? Give you a way too early preview of next season as a few guys have announced their return. But then Matt Rhule leaves. Talk about the coaching search and what exactly is going on and who we would like to see at the assistant coaching positions. And then end it off with our thoughts on both of the All-Star games, where we saw a few Longhorn signees put on their high school pads for the last time. Darius, how was the New Year's, man? You got any good New Year's resolutions coming up?
Hey. New Year's resolutions. No, New Year's resolutions this year. I'm just glad to be alive. You know, I'm glad to, you know, have my loved ones around me. Got to enjoy that time with the family, man. But it's over now. It's back to it. It's back to work. How's everything for you? How's everything been going?
It's been going well. I've been thinking about the 2020s and wondering if this is the decade that Texas turns it around, because just got through the decade of suck. You ended it off with a high note, but still, it was just not what Longhorn fans wanted out of their team. You know, starting off the decade with a national championship game. You know, that's when Colt McCoy went down, and kind of a curse of the 2010s was the Colt McCoy neck injury. So you end off the 2010s with beating number 11 Utah in dominating fashion in the Alamo Bowl. After a pretty mediocre season, right?
Yeah, that win over Utah was it definitely surprised some people. You know, basically surprised everybody except the ones in that locker room. And I thought it was a great way to get some momentum going heading into the offseason, like you mentioned, especially following such a season that didn't meet expectations.
Right, a very lackluster season. But let's talk about what we saw in the Alamo Bowl. And I have a few notes on what exactly we did see. And I'll start off with this. Devin Duvernay in that game, in my eyes, is at the very least a second-day drafted dude. At the very least. I think he's a second-round guy, especially when he gets invited to the combine and he runs that 40, add the tape to his combine numbers, which are going to be good because, I mean, he only goes up from what he had in high school, which were insane numbers. He's going to be a second-day guy in a loaded wide receiver draft.
Yeah, and for those listening that aren't completely sure, a couple years ago, the NFL went back. They changed the way they did the draft. The first day is their first-round picks. The second day that Will alluded to, that's the second and the third round. And then the third day of the draft is the fourth through seventh rounds. And when he says he feels like Devin Duvernay is a day two guy, definitely in that second to third round range. That means he had to be one of the first, 96 players drafted to go on day two, to go in the first 2 days. Common sense tells me Devin Duvernay's easily should be one of the top 96 players in this draft. But, I mean, at the same time, well, we did just see him have this season, and he went basically completely unacknowledged throughout the postseason awards and postseason accolades.
Which is why I'm saying his combine numbers are going to get people's eyes open.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I feel like, folks, he's expected to run well at the combine. You know, I mean, everybody knows he was a Texas State champion coming out of high school. He's a 10-2, 100-meter guy. They're going to expect him to run fast. If anything, matter of fact, I feel like if he runs anything, I mean, if he runs a 4-4 in the 4-4s, I honestly feel like it might not help him at all. I feel like because that's what people are going to expect. They might be a little disappointed. I'm most excited for him because he got invited to the Senior Bowl. So what's going to happen is he's going to get a week in Mobile, surrounded by those NFL scouts, surrounded by coaches, and he's going to get an opportunity because, yeah, Duvernay, we know who he is. Of course, you know, we love him. We respect him, but he didn't get that national attention. And what he's going to do, he's going to get to go up against some guys that some of the scouts and national media have shown more attention to throughout the year, throughout their careers. He's going to get an opportunity to see how he stacks up. And I think it's going to show out there. And I do agree with you. I think he'll find his way into that day two mix. It is a crazy wide receiver draft. I feel like Duvernay, with all he brings to the table, he's going to be a steal for somebody.
Oh, for real.
If he doesn't go in those first, if he falls out of the second round, once he hits that range, he's going to be a steal for somebody.
Yeah, he's found money if he leaves that second round undrafted.
Yeah.
But the next thing that I thought about this game was how deadly Texas can get when they get pressure on the quarterback. That was one thing that they had missed the entire season. And even last season, too, they just had an inability to get pressure on the quarterback. And that was a huge detriment to this defense. And we just saw what this defense can look like when they finally get pressure on that quarterback. And honestly, a lot of it was just utilizing guys in the correct positions where mm-hmm. they should be. That was one of the main reasons that Malik Jefferson had a kind of lackluster career his first 2 years, until he was finally utilized correctly his third and final year. The same thing here with Joseph Osai. I think Joseph Osai, and we talked about this earlier in the year, saying, hey, Joseph Osai, he's great when he goes backwards, but he's elite going forward. And the fact that Todd Orlando had him going backwards most of the year, I think this game proved that probably cost him his job.
Just focusing on the defense versus Utah, I thought to put things in plain, simple terms, I thought it was kind of a mix of, you know, Todd Orlando, same old thing. Craig Kniper mixed in just some common sense solutions that, you know, any rational fan has been watching all year has been screaming for.
Right.
You know, I kind of wonder, I wonder how many times Craig Kniper was sitting in film after games this year and just, you know, losing his mind over there and not being able to say anything. But what you saw was, you saw more true four-down fronts and obvious run situations. You saw less zone blitzing, because all that zone blitzing does is provide quick hot reads for the other team. And Texas wasn't tackling worth the crap this year, so that was easy money every time he brought the stupid zone blitzes. There was more over-the-top help for the corners, I thought. And I thought there was less just, you know, press coverage, just blitzing, being aggressive. There was less being aggressive just for the sake of being aggressive, you know, just to say, you know,
right,
you're doing stuff. Kind of, you know, watching that, I can't help but feel like, you know, man, what if he would have been the defensive coordinator throughout the season, man? I feel like, you know, it maybe would have looked different. But with Chris Ash's background, with being a defensive backs guy, and with him having his most comfortability from everything we understand, being with the safeties, Craig Kniper didn't play cornerback. You know, he's not a cornerback's coach. And I wonder how they're going to find a way to be able to, you know, to retain him. But I was really impressed with what he put on his resume with that performance, with his first time getting a chance to call the defense.
Right. I think another thing that we saw in this game was the importance of Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay to this offense. The offense really had them as a crutch when Sam Ellinger ever needed an out to get the ball out. Those guys made some great catches. They've been doing that all year long. And I think they're really going to miss these guys when they leave.
The opening deep shot to Colin Johnson to start the game, I thought in a way kind of set the tone at Texas. You know, they weren't going to play timid at all in their own house, defending their own turf. Even though the record doesn't back it up, I felt like not having Colin Johnson for six games this season really it really limited some of the things that they could do. It caused things. It slowed the offense down. It probably – not having Colin Johnson out there, in my opinion, easily took 7 points off the board every game. And if you just go back through the schedule, 7 points in a single ball game for Texas, Will, that's probably the difference in almost every game. And it sucks for Colin. It sucks for his brother as well. You know, I wonder if kind of, you know, with the injury history with those guys, if it's just, you know, it's just genetics. You know, for some people it's just, you know, soft tissue injuries, things like that. It's just we're built differently. And I think that's going to be part of the problem. It's going to hurt Colin big time when it comes draft time. You know, availability is an ability. So I think it's going to hurt him come draft time. But, yeah, going back to Texas and talking about the game and the offense, I think, of course, you're going to miss Duvernay and Johnson in the passing game. But I feel like with Sam being a senior next year, Texas has recruited very well at wide receiver. The passing games have found a way. What I'm most concerned about is the offensive line. You know, I thought Zach Sackelford gets a lot of attention. I think he's a little bit overvalued, but, you know, a solid starting center, you know, can't be taken for granted. I think you'll see Kerstetter slide into his spot next year. And what you're going to do is see a young guy like Tyler Johnson or Christian Jones get a chance early on in the spring to lock down one of those, that right tackle spot. And the offensive line is probably – it's probably going to be the weakest unit to start the season next year.
Right, but Christian Jones was very highly touted by this staff last spring. Sounded like he needed maybe one more year because before college he had played football for, 2 years? Mm-hmm. So kind of getting that athletic mold of his body into a football player, that's what he's needed. So having 2-3 years under his belt, that could probably help him jumpstart into this next year.
If anybody's listening and they recorded the Alamo Bowl, if you want to see that second team offensive line, just go back, rewind, go to the last series of the game. Texas was still running plays and stuff. Well, they were going at it, giving Casey Thompson and Co. a real look. So if you want to take a look at some of those young guys, you got 5 to 7 plays of live action of Christian Jones, of Reese Moore, you know, those guys like that out there, Denzel Okafor. So that would be a good, I feel like that would be a good thing to reference for what you're probably going to see this spring. Sorry to cut you off.
I think Denzel Okafor likely moves to that right guard position, and you move Junior Anguilau over to your left guard position. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm pretty happy with that left side of Cosme, Junior, and Kerstetter. Yeah. And then Okafor as well, because that's his actual position is a guard. So that right tackle, again, I mean, it just seems like every year the right tackle is a huge question mark. This year, it's a bigger question mark because you don't have a guy like Kerstetter who's an easy plug into that spot.
Is Kerstetter? I think Kerstetter is pretty dang versatile. Kerstetter's gonna mess around playing the NFL, man.
Oh yeah, that dude's good. He's been good since his freshman year. He can play every spot
on the line. Yeah, he's quietly put together a really solid career. But okay, yeah. Go ahead.
No, let's get into the significance, the broader significance of beating Utah to close out the season, and really, the biggest one is making this team believe again. After having a rough season, after having a middle of the season where you were very close to a locker room revolt, having this be the end, where you take out a number 11 team in the nation by 28 points, by 4 touchdowns, that's going to give this team some belief in this coaching staff once again, or at least Tom Herman and his vision once again. That's going to be huge going into this offseason, where you're going to need to keep these guys' heads on straight so that you can get into a big year next year, which you have the potential to do with how many people are returning.
Well, yeah, from a player standpoint, I look at it as, I mean, imagine being a guy in there. Okay, we voiced our what our problems was as players. As soon as the regular season was over, changes were made. Coach, from a player's point of view, coach listened. Okay, changes were made. Then we went out, played in the bowl game, and you know, like you mentioned, we beat a team that was, you know, they were seriously being considered for the college football playoff prior to losing in the Pac-12 championship game. We took a team that was ranked number 11 in the country and was considered one of the top 7 or 8 teams in the country throughout the year. And like you said, beat them by 4 touchdowns. Look at what we're capable of. We've got the problems out of the way now. Coach promised he would bring in the best guys possible. Changes have been made. Changes are being made. We went out there and saw what we can do when we come to play, when we're put in the best position to be successful. And I think that's definitely something that you can build off of. It's a real thing as a player. You know, I remember coming back, you go home and recharge for 10 to 12 days at home with friends and family, and then it's right back to work. As soon as they get back to school, Will, the 2020 season has started. You know, it's not really – this right. is the only break you're going to get. And it's definitely a better feeling. I think momentum is a real thing when you're coming off a win. You know, everything's is different. I think that also it worked out for Texas moving past the players, moving on as far as a perception on the recruiting side. Well, look at it. You saw Oklahoma, even though they made it to the college football playoff, they got destroyed. And it's just everything right now. It seems like the 2 days later, they lose their commitment from the top player in 2021, a top quarterback. Perception is everything. And I think right now, with the news that came down today of Matt Rhule leaving Baylor now, Texas was the only team to win a game during bowl season, and now you got Oklahoma taking a perception hit. You've got Baylor taking a hit. You know, one of the best coaches in the country is now out of your conference now, and that might affect some guys that you're currently recruiting. You know, Alfred Collins, Princely Human Yellen. Well, now that coach isn't there anymore. That's probably going to rule that team out. It helps. So that win was big. That win was big. And then, you know, you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it gives Tom Herman a huge upper hand in finishing out this class for the 2020 class. And then it helps him with a huge jump start in the 2021 cycle. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not going to be able to carry that on throughout the entire summer, but at least in the spring, that's going to help him get his name and get his identity into the minds of some of these top players in the state and the country. Hey, we did this after we cleaned house. Think about what we can do with you. Sort of, that's going to be the message he's going to be giving to guys like Alfred Collins, Princely Mamiellen, and then all the guys in the 2021 class the spring. Now, it also shows just how talented this roster is when it is unleashed. That was the talent that this roster has been holding all season long. That's what we've been talking about when we say, hey, this roster is talented. They are fast, they're strong, they're powerful. They were showing that all game long. They are just a physically gifted team. Now, when they're able to unleash that, when they're able to understand their positions, that's when you can say, yes, they're talented. They're more talented than other teams, and they're showing it. They weren't able to show it off this year. They're finally able to show it off in that bowl game.
Yeah, no, that was one of the first times this year where, like, there was a physical difference between the two teams. And Utah had some big guys out there on their defense, but Texas was moving them around. I thought Joseph Asai being rolled down to that, he didn't have his hand in the ground, but it was more of a rush in kind of look, kind of like for the folks that have been following, you know, kind of if you can think back to the mid-2000s, remember Sergio Kendall, the way he used to line up on the end line of scrimmage. That kind of role, yes. If he's going to be in a position like that all next year and play like that, it's going to be his last year, yeah. And Texas hasn't had guys look like that in far too long. So it's exciting, and you hope that it seems so obvious, Will. It seems so obvious. So you hope that common sense can stay in the building and, not make this thing harder than it has to be.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is it makes you wonder about Tom Herman and his consistency issues. You know, his nickname now is Tom Bowl Herman. And hey, that's not a bad thing if you're having good seasons. But the only thing that's been consistent about Tom Herman is his inconsistency throughout the season, his inability to beat the teams that he needs to beat 100% of the time. Winning your bowl game is great, but you need to be able to have that be the cherry on top and not the thing that you're hopefully trying to sell.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I don't know that he struggles. I mean, since he's been, what was that? He just concluded year three. They were 7-6, 10-4, 8-5. It's hard for me, and I understand. It's just there were a freakish amount of injuries this year, and I don't know any team that could have suffered the casualties that Texas suffered in that secondary this season and wouldn't have had issues. And it was a down Big 12 this year offensively. If you look at the statistics and even just looking at the results of the bowl games, and even still, Texas was in every ball game. So I just think it was a little bit of a mixture of bad luck this year on top of players not being put in the best position. But I'm going back to what I alluded to, talking about, you know, from the players' perception, changes were made. Changes are being made. So whether that's, you know, Tom Herman's back being up against the wall, he's trying to save his own butt, trying to save his job, or is it, no, I've realized that these things are wrong. These things need to be changed. You know, I just feel like
a little bit of column B.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just my optimism meter is going to be high heading into the spring and next season.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to chalk this season up. I'm going to chalk it up to just some injuries, some bad luck. And I know a lot of folks might not agree with that.
So let's go ahead and take a look at this next season. Okay. You know, what did the UC in the Utah game that can be applied to next season, especially when we come to putting these guys in the correct roles? You know, we obviously talked about Joseph Osai, but there are other two guys on that defensive line who had really great games like Keiondre Coburn and Taquan Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And also having two linebackers. Court Jacques was out there, potentially a guy who could be out there, see the field some more, because, dang, he did actually pretty well.
he played the first half. It looked like, I don't know, it looked like Juwan Mitchell was serving a suspension or something, because Mitchell played that whole second half. And
yeah, but Mitchell also played well. Having that guy play in the traditional middle linebacker role, and then Caden Stearns given more of a center fielder type role in this defense, which, again, a more common sense thing, giving him less individual roles and giving him more of a grand vision role,
mm-hmm.
that allowed him to be more dynamic on the field. I liked what I saw out of a lot of these players, and hopefully what we'll see going to next year.
Well,
as long as you can continue that with Chris Ash.
Yeah, I think Tavondre Sweat and Keiondre Coburn, I think those are your defensive tackles next year. It was cool to see Moro Ojomo is playing some defensive end, Taquan Graham, Marquez Bimich. Texas is going to have debt next year. And then Joseph Osai, Chris Dorbro. Where I'm going to be interested to see is Texas is pretty much bringing everybody back. At safety in that defensive backfield. Texas didn't have Brandon Jones on that bowl game.
And really on defensive line as well.
Yeah, but Brandon Jones didn't play in that bowl game, Will, and I really didn't even notice. You know, if they wouldn't have ever said anything, you wouldn't even notice. Chris Brown only played one series.
Chris Adamora played out of his mind.
Yeah, no, he looked great. So what I'm wondering, you know, what's going to happen at the nickel spot? Because, you know, that's kind of where they were sneaking in. B.J. Foster, you know, DeMarvin Overshawn. But so what's going to happen in nickel? Because, you know, Josh Thompson will be back next year. So does Chris Brown. You mentioned Adamora. I thought Adamora played his butt off in the bowl game. He looked pretty good out there. He looked natural. He didn't look like it was too big for him. Just looking at that, Thompson, Adamora, Brown, I would assume, you know, let's pencil in Brown. Say Brown's the guy that starts off the season there because, you know, he played well this season.
I mean, Brown is good. Brown is underrated by – even Longhorn fans.
But what it means is with all those guys being back now, you still have that same problem at corner that you had with Cook, Jameson, and Jalen Green. I was thinking, well, maybe you can just slide Deshaun Jameson down to the nickel. You can't really do that because you got Josh Thompson coming back, Chris Brown. You know, it's not enough spots for folks. And then you still got B.J. Foster. You still got DeMarvin Overshawn. Still got Caden Stearns. Overshawn's got to be out there. I can't imagine them going through spring practices this year and looking at that film from this past year. And you got to have 31 out there. You got to have 25 out there. It's a good problem to have, but somebody's not going to be playing. But I'm just interested to see. I mean, do you take one of those lines? Can you convince Foster or Overshawn? Can you convince one of them to slide down to one of those linebacker spots? You still got Juwan Mitchell. Texas has a chance to be salty on defense next year. I agree with what you said.
They are going to be salty next year. I think that Utah game proved it. You're coming back, returning basically everybody. Basically mm-hmm. everybody. You're losing two guys, Malcolm Roach and Brandon Jones, who, while great, were not next level.
Malcolm Roach was good. I wish we could have saw him play in his four down front. But he's replaceable with what Texas has next year. Brandon Jones.
Right.
I personally thought Brandon Jones' career was a little bit of a disappointment for the accolades that he came in with, where he was rated, mm-hmm. and he played so much. But like I was saying a second ago, if the announcer wouldn't have said it, I wouldn't even notice he wasn't out there. You know, they're not going to be hurting at safety at all. But with Joseph Asada, one thing, if Texas cleans up those missed tackles like they had this year, and I think that comes back to injuries and maybe not tackling during practice because of all the injuries and stuff, but they've got a chance to be good. But another question, what the heck do you do with Malcolm Epps? Because, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Marcus Washington was getting more reps behind Colin Johnson than he was the last two or three games of the season.
I think they're going to have to talk to Malcolm Epps and say, hey, maybe you need to slip back down to that tight end position.
I think
they've been telling him that this entire year.
Do you?
But I think it was a little too late in the middle of the season to move him back to tight end.
And going to tight end, you'd have him, you'd have Jared Wiley, who I thought got better as the year went on. You got Kay mm-hmm. Brewer back. Braden Lebrock was the number one tight end in the country as a recruit. So you got some – Texas has some talent. They do. Josh Moore is supposed to be back after serving this suspension. So Josh Moore, Jake Smith.
I don't know about that one, but we'll see. don't think
if
so.
If he will, let's say he does. I mean, Josh Moore is a playmaker. Jake Smith, Brennan Eagles. Like, Texas has some talent. They've got some talent.
I think he can slip down Jordan Whittington as well, potentially into that slot position.
I'm going to hold off on him. Right now, I don't have any expectations of Jordan Whittington. He's been dealing with that hernia since high school. It's a soft tissue kind of thing. With him, he's going to be found money for me if he ever. I'll believe it with him when I see it. And I hate to be the negative Nancy there or whatever, but he's been dealing with that for a while. He's been nagging for a while, and it's been multiple surgeries now.
Yeah, that X or Z wide receiver are going to be crucial to finding in this offseason. Whether, Brennan Eagles is obviously one of those guys.
Eagles got to go to work, man. He's supposed to be the number one receiver next year. He's got to go to work this offseason. Yeah. He's got to get in the lab. He's got to dedicate himself to it. And he's capable of doing it. He's got the talent.
If Texas is going to win and win big next year, Brennan Eagles and Jake Smith are going to need to take steps up. Huge steps up. Especially Brennan Eagles. Now, he had a great season, but he needs to round out his game. Next season is the season he's going to need to do it. And it's going to need to be done in a big way. Because you're going to have to be replacing a lot of production with Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay leaving. That's a lot to replace. You know, you thought it was hard to replace little Jordan Humphrey. Now you're replacing two of some of the best wide receivers you've had on campus in quite a while.
Yeah.
So, sticking with this offensive side of the ball, let's talk about who's returning with Sam Ehlinger. Obviously, he was going to return, but Sam Cosmi returning. And that, again, is a huge thing. I don't think it can be overstated how important Sam Cosmi returning to this football team is to the prospects for the 2020 season.
Yeah, Sam Cosmi was a guy early on in the year, the first, 3, 4, 5 weeks of the year. When those mock drafts first started popping up, Sam Cosby's name was being included in that first round. I do feel like as the year went on, he kind of wore down a little bit. I think he might have played himself out of that first round talk a little bit. The potential, the talent, everything is obviously there. Cosmi needs another year to get stronger, needs another year to continue to work on his craft. He's got a chance to be a first round guy, and he's going to be the leader of the offensive line next year. And by all accounts, he's as respected as it is, as it gets in that locker room. And getting him back for his redshirt junior year was crucial because, as we talked about earlier, the offensive line is already probably going to be considered one of the weaker units on the team when spring ball starts. If Cosmi was not a part of that line, then it absolutely would have been the weakest unit on the team. And I would have been a little bit scared for Sam, man. There have been a lot of questions that needed to get filled before next September 1st.
Yeah, and with both the Sams returning, though, it kind of goes to my little hypothesis about how to build a winning football team. Mm-hmm. It all revolves around the quarterback. There are four positions you really need to succeed in football. You need a good quarterback. You need a good left tackle to protect that quarterback. The other side of the ball, you need a good defensive end to disrupt the quarterback, a good pass rusher, an elite pass rusher, and then you need an elite cornerback to disrupt the pass when it gets off. Those are the four positions you need on your team. Next year, Texas will have an elite quarterback, an elite left tackle, an elite pass rusher. Now, if Jalen Green, Anthony Cook, or Deshaun Jameson can come out and become an all-time cornerback, this Texas team can go really far next year. And that's what I think the two Sams returning is going to be so important to next year, is because two of those most important positions on the field, you're getting back.
Yeah, and something I want to mention that I noticed when I was watching Georgia and Baylor. Did you notice the graphic that ESPN kept talking about? I guess it was just in case, Baylor made it a close game or something. But they kept talking about all the players Georgia had out and that was missing that Sugar Bowl. Well, all those guys weren't hurt. And what I couldn't help but keep thinking, I'm like, that's a lot of guys thinking about themselves and their future. For a team to win 11 games or whatever and make it to a Sugar Bowl, and you're missing double-digit players, or you have 3 or 4 guys that are academically ineligible that were out for undisclosed reasons. That's what that is. They didn't take care of their business because they were planning on being 3 years and out. things like that. That's the type of poison that that you saw Kirby Smart talking about that's in that program. And what I'm seeing at Texas, well, one is you might say, well, hey, maybe those players aren't – Texas don't have players good enough to sit out. But, no, that's not true. You saw players skipping the bowl game two, three years ago with Sean Elliott, you know, things like that. I think you're seeing a culture change because Texas didn't have – they had guys that could have declared for the draft. Sam Cosmi, even though it wouldn't have been the – they could have sat out. They could have. But you've got guys that are committed to the program, committed to their teammates, committed to each other. And I think that's a positive sign. Moving forward and moving towards next year. That's just something that I had thought about earlier. I wanted to mention that.
Oh, yeah. That's completely right. This team could have completely fallen apart at the end of the season like it did a few years ago, but this team stuck together. Credit to Tom Herman on that.
They stuck together and Tom Herman, and he made changes. He listened. He's making changes. Oh, he's going to get fired. Tom Herman's not going to get fired if Texas wins 8 games again next year. I don't believe that at all. He's listening to his players. I think we need to pay more attention to that.
I don't know. If you win 8 games in Sam Ellinger's
Well, no, with that talent, I mean, yeah. You're not going to win 8 games next year. But, I mean, hey, has Texas had anybody hit the portal yet besides the backup punter?
No.
You know, that's what I'm saying. I think that's a positive sign. It's a positive sign. As far as what everything is like right now and what they have heading into winter workouts.
And one other thing, looking forward to next season, in talking about Tom Herman and giving him props, is one of the weakest positions coming into this year was the running back position. And leaving the season, it's now one of the strongest. And going into next year, it might be the strongest position on the field, skill-wise. Because they have next year Keontae Ingram, who after that game, I mean, you can see what he can do. I think Rashawn Johnson likely sticks at running back. I think that's his best position.
Need to figure out what to do with him too, because apparently he wants a shot at quarterback. I don't know.
I'm sure they'll give it to him.
Yeah,
I'm sure they'll give it to him. This is one thing they were talking about when Brew McCoy was on the field was, hey, we'll let you play wide receiver, and if you know if you're not going to break the depth chart at wide receiver, which he was, then you know, hey, you'll figure it out, and then come to the coaches and say, hey, you know, maybe I should try defensive end. That was what they were talking about with Brew McCoy. I think the same thing's going to happen with Rashawn Johnson. I think, hey, next year, you know, try to break the quarterback depth chart, but if you can't beat Casey Thompson out, then let's stick with what you were really, really good at last year, which was running back, and boy, was he good.
Well, I'm getting confused. I'm wondering where Roshan's going to fit in. If he says he wants to go back to quarterback, okay, fine. You go back to quarterback, you don't beat out Casey Thompson. Okay, you're the third string quarterback. Or best case, you beat out Casey Thompson. Great, you're the backup quarterback. Sam Ellinger's the quarterback. You're not getting any reps, okay? So say you go back to running back. Okay, Keontae Ingram's the starting running back. Looked great in the last game. I know you're going to mention it. We're going to talk about it. Bijan Robinson is going to play. He's going to play a lot next year. Okay, he's your 1B running back. If he's not your starter, he's your backup running back. So you're either, best case, the backup quarterback.
And then Jordan Whittington, if he gets healthy.
Yeah, but so if you're Roshan, though, you're either best case, the backup quarterback, or the third string running back. Where do you fit in?
I think he'd be backup running back. I think Bijan Robinson's good. But, I mean, Rashawn Johnson blew up. Come on, dude.
Okay. All right. Texas hadn't had anybody like Bijan Robinson. They haven't had anybody like him in a long time.
That's the thing, though, about running back is you can cycle guys in.
And Roshan Johnson can be the best. You can be the best teammate. You can be – running back's not a position that takes a whole lot of thinking. I'm trying to tell you, they ain't had anybody like him. He's not playing over Bijan Robinson, man. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see.
I am a stout Rashawn Johnson fan.
That's great.
At running back.
Great kid. Great guy. Great guy. He's not in the same ballpark. Texas hadn't had anybody like this dude that's coming in here.
Rashawn Johnson is just so much fun to watch at running back. Just so much fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
I hope you enjoyed it.
Shut up.
Because he ain't playing over Bijan Robinson, I'm trying to tell you.
So let's go ahead and talk about the guy who isn't coming back next year and what it means for Texas with Matt Rhule going to the Panthers. And that means a lot for Texas. Now, at Texas, you don't like to be in a spot where you're hoping for other guys to leave so that you can win, right? But at the same time, you need every win you can get at this point in the program's history. You need everything that can help you get a step up on the competition. And if that's the Big 12 getting weaker, so be it. So be it. If that gets Texas to 11 wins, 12 wins, so be it.
Yeah, nobody care about no conference pride. It's not A&M over here.
Now, it's not given that now Texas will beat them because Matt Rhule isn't there, because we don't know who's coming back. It might be Joey McGuire. It might be somebody else coming back, and we don't know. You know, Charlie Brewer is still a really good quarterback. They still have a lot of guys who are going to be there, but it's now a bigger question mark for Baylor now that they have a new coach coming in, and which is going to bring everything else that a new coach coming in brings. If it's Joey McGuire, it's going to be less of a rough transition, but still, he's not Matt Rhule.
I think Joey McGuire makes the most sense for Baylor. I played against Joey McGuire, Cedar Hill teams. Obviously, they're in the same district. He won multiple state championships there. I met the guy again as an adult, and from – I mean, by all accounts, what everybody says he is. He's a great guy. He's a genuine guy. And the thing about Coach McGuire, you know, being a Texas high school coaching legend, well, part of the deal is if he becomes the head coach at Baylor, Baylor instantly goes right back. Their recruiting efforts are going to be even better than what you've been seeing. I don't know if you remember those last few years of Art Briles. Baylor was getting guys that were top 10 players in the state. Baylor was getting four of the top 25. That is going to go back to looking like that because Joey McGuire knows everybody. And I don't know if you folks, if you have social media, if you got Twitter, things like that, there's a hashtag going on right now, hashtag hire McGuire or hashtag TTHL, that's turn those horns loose, which is referring to Cedar Hill where he came from, was a saying they had, one speed. It's a big movement right now for on the Baylor side, on that campus, in that locker room, in that program, four guys campaigning for him to be the head coach. And what that would do would be it would be a huge shot in the arm for them in recruiting, and also it's a way for them to keep continuity going. He's been there for 3 years now. He left Cedar Hill to go be on that staff. He would move right in and would keep everybody in place. I think that would be a home run hire for them in a way, even though he is unproven. But what you worry about with high school coaches is their ability to recruit. You wouldn't have to worry about that with this guy at all because, I mean, he would come to this Texas staff, in my opinion, and be the best recruiter on the staff.
Now, I want you to convince me this. He's not Chad Morris.
Chad Morris has nowhere near the charisma or ability to connect with people like Joey McGuire does. No, he's nothing. He's not Chad Morris, no. But at the same time, he might not be as brilliant of an offensive mind as Chad Morris. But Chad Morris, they're two completely different guys.
The idea is he was successful at the high school level. Mm-hmm. He came in as a recruiter. He came in bringing a high octane offense.
Right, but the difference is again, but Chad Morris was hired from the high school to go be the head coach. Right, same thing with UNT with Todd Dyes. They hired him straight from the high school to be the head coach. Joey McGuire has been an assistant on that Baylor staff for 3 years now. He's had 3 years to see how everything works, and he did it under a guy that, you know, clearly is regarded as one of the best coaches in college football. Now he's going to go coach the NFL. The difference is he has been there, whereas with those other guys, it was brand new to them.
No, I get that. And Joey McGuire, if he is hired, I don't know how much the drop-off is going to be. It won't likely be a tremendous drop-off from last year. It might be because they're losing a lot of guys on defense and a few guys on offense. Like, it's going to be hard to replace Denzel Mims. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's sort of what we've been seeing with all of these coaching changes. In the case of Ohio State, Oklahoma, and now you're probably going to see it at Baylor, the less upheaval, the better. And that's probably what's going to happen here. So Baylor are not likely going to take a huge step down, but likely take a step back as they regain their talent.
I don't expect Baylor to win double-digit games every year.
No. It's more the TCU model of have a tremendous year, have an off year, have a tremendous year, have a middling year, have a tremendous year sort of thing, where you have to get your talent in spurts.
Yeah. But TCU, I don't know how they went 5-7 this year, and he signed two top 10 players in the state.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's what he does.
That's never happened. He's never not to this extent. So, no, look out. TCU ain't going anywhere.
No, no way.
Not going anywhere.
Now looking forward to what's going on with the coaching staff, because you have Derek Wareheim and Tim Beck leaving. Tim Beck going to NC State to be their offensive coordinator, and Derek Wareheim going to New Mexico to be their offensive coordinator. You have Maringer has already been fired. You had Todd Orlando who had already been fired. So you are now keeping Herb Hand. You're keeping Stan Drayton. You're looking for that wide receiver, and you're looking for that tight end coach. You already have your quarterback coach in Mike Yurcich. We talked about that last week. Defensive side, that's the interesting side this week, because not much has really happened on the offensive side. You still have your wide receivers, Andre Coleman, Tyrone Carrier, and Emmett Jones, with Emmett Jones and Tyrone Carrier really the two outstanding guys, and tight end still a huge question mark. Defensive side, Nyvard's fate is unknown, but he's not likely going to return. Same thing with Washington. He's also interviewing for his job, but likely not happening. The only guy who is likely safe on that side is Oscar Giles. So that means you are looking for a cornerback coach, a defensive tackle coach, and a linebacker coach who are all right now being interviewed by the defensive coordinator. So let's go ahead and talk about some of these guys who their names have been brought up, and they're guys who we would like to see at this position. So let's talk about first the defensive tackle position. Because with Matt Rhule leaving, and even with Matt Rhule staying, this guy was a huge name and potential to come to Texas. Frank Okum, the former freshman All-American, really great player as a defensive tackle for Texas, has had a pretty good coaching career. He has transitioned all over and ended up in the last couple years at Baylor, where he was known as a heck of a recruiter and a heck of a developer. He is a name that if Texas were to land him, it'd be huge. And he's likely to come to Texas because, man, it's his alma mater.
Oh, it definitely makes sense with the coach leaving, with there being questions, current questions about, you know, those guys on that staff wondering about their futures. Yeah, Frank Okum, you know, he's a young guy. He can't be, but, you know, 33, 34, 35 years old. Yeah, he came. He played at Texas. He was an all-freshman All-American while he was here, former five-star recruit. I think he got drafted in the fifth round to the Houston Texans. From there, he came. He went GA'd. He coached at Rice prior to getting a job at Baylor. And, yeah, by all accounts, he's done a great job. I mean, Baylor just had the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Their nose tackle, Bravion Roy, is going to get drafted. He's going to go in the first four or five rounds of the draft. That Baylor D-line was stout. So, no, Coach Okum, that would be pretty cool for Texas fans to see, for the defensive line to be coached by a former defensive end and by a former defensive tackle. That's pretty dang cool, man. Because I don't know if you had a situation like that anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, and with the defensive line being as deep as we discussed it being, that's exciting. It's exciting.
And it's unique because, I mean, both guys have played, and they've played at a high level. Oakland's played at the highest level, you know, going to the NFL. If they're able to get the guys to finish with Collins and Human Yellen, they can clean up in-state with the top defensive linemen. If you can get some talent in here with these guys, man, I just Oakland will be a home run, in my opinion, at that position.
So that's the front runner right now, I believe, at defensive tackle for Texas. Or at least that would be my front runner.
That'd be great.
If I'm Chris Ash.
They said they were interested in Elijah Robinson from A&M, but
I don't think that's happening.
Stay. But no, Okum will be awesome.
And then another name that was thrown out there is Eric Henderson, the current defensive line coach for the Rams. I don't think that's happening, but it's a guy who Chris Ash offered a job to not long ago. But that guy's career has just absolutely blown up. The dude started off as a GA for Oklahoma State in 2013 and 2015, went immediately to be the defensive line coach at UTSA, and from there took a step up to be the LA Chargers assistant defensive line coach. Then, after 2 years, defensive line coach for the Rams. Yeah, and, you know, you're working with Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. That's a hard position to really give up and go down to Texas.
He would think. But, hey, didn't Stan Drayton came from the Bears. So, you know, you never know. You never know. It doesn't make sense to me. But would definitely it would resonate with guys if they were able to make something like that happen, for sure.
Right. Now, going to the linebacker position, and this one's a little bit more up in the air. These aren't official names out there that Texas is looking at. These are names that I would like to see them give a shot to. And one of the names that really kind of came off when I was looking through linebacker coaches in the nation was the current linebacker coach for Mississippi State. Now, with everything that's going on at Mississippi State, there's likely to be some attrition, not just in the players, but with the coaching staff as well. And they currently have one of the rising coaching stars at linebacker in the nation, Chris Marv. The guy started off at Vandy. He played at Vandy, then went and coached the linebackers at Vanderbilt and was recently just hired at Mississippi State. While he was at Vanderbilt, his defenses were ranked in the top 30, you know, where he coached up a number of players, including Jordan Griffin, who had 119 tackles and was drafted in the third round, and then an all-SEC freshman who had 84 tackles. The dude knows how to coach. The dude knows how to develop. He's a young guy. He probably knows how to recruit, being the young guy he is. That's an interesting name that I would probably do a little bit more research into and see, hey, maybe he wants to leave the tenuous situation at Mississippi State, continue to rise to the ranks, and give him a shot at Texas.
No, that's a name I hadn't heard. I'm not familiar with him at all. You know, I appreciate you bringing it up. I'm going to check it out. And I encourage our listeners to do the same, because we haven't heard anything about the linebackers.
No, really, that's the thing. It's been difficult, is there's not much coming out.
Not as many moles, not as many bold moles in the program. Hey, coming back to that culture I was talking about being built. Hey, I'm on to something.
But yeah, we haven't really heard much about linebackers. We haven't heard much about cornerbacks. It looks like Chris Ash potentially is sticking with his guys from Rutgers, which I'm not a big fan of.
But I do say fire Jason Washington, just for the simple fact that Kobe Boyce at one point was still starting games over the other three guys. So he needs to be fired.
Yeah, but there's another linebacker coach guy who I was looking at, and that's Rob Smith, the former defensive coordinator at Minnesota and Arkansas. Fired from both of those, but still a very good position coach. You know, you have a bunch of guys who they go from coordinator to head coach, and they turn out to not be a great head coach, but they're a great coordinator. That's Rob Smith for position coaches. He's a great linebacker coach. He's had trouble getting to the defensive coordinator position. So bring him back to Texas, bring him back down to the linebacker position, get a Big Ten type of linebacker coach into Texas and see, hey, you know, Rob Smith, do what you do, which is coach linebackers. That's another guy who I was potentially thinking about. Definitely not an official name out there. And then cornerback, I mean, the only name really at cornerback that excites me that's coming out is Kerry Combs, and that is just unrealistic. The guy who is currently the Tennessee Titans cornerback coach, secondary coach, it was the assistant defensive coordinator for Ohio State. He's not coming to Texas to be a cornerback coach. That's not happening. But
Kay keeps mentioning him. It doesn't make sense to me. But, I mean, yeah, that would be phenomenal. That would be phenomenal. And I'm sure, you know, everybody in the program, every recruit, every cornerback in Texas will be doing backflips. But it doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, maybe you keep Jason Washington on staff just for the simple fact of the fact that I'm not really excited about anybody else who they're throwing out there.
No.
Dwayne Akina?
Hey, that'd be great if you want to come. Dwayne Akina, he's on the coast though. You know, he always talking about Hawaii. He's too close. He's not going nowhere. That's just a joke.
I don't know what they do at cornerback, and that's a huge question mark, especially given the fact that those cornerback guys, those guys need to take a step up. They really do.
I would have said hire Brian Westbrook, but then Kelee Ringo didn't even sign, so nope. No job for him either. So I don't know, man.
He didn't do his job in high school. He can't get a job in Texas.
He didn't do his job. He's supposed to funnel kids. It's not about what the kids want.
You know, it's on that note, let's go ahead and get down to a little bit of recruiting. Next week will be a lot more heavy recruiting episode as we get into how Texas will likely finish out the second half. Really, how I feel is the second half of the recruiting National Signing Day, and then start with the 2021 class. Let's go ahead and take a look back at the 2020 class. There's a few signees and a few guys who potentially, well, really one guy who could potentially come to Texas, played on the national stage, at the Under Armour All-American Bowl and the All-American Bowl. I don't know what they're calling it now. Army All-American. It's not Army All-American Bowl anymore. But let's go ahead and get through a few of these guys here that played on national television. And let's start off with a guy who's been fun. You know, not so much going to Texas. In fact, he's not going to Texas because Texas already has a guy in that position. Let's start off with Zach Evans, a guy who had a pretty, honestly, awkward interview on TV, has been bouncing around between different schools. He's, you know, was originally going to Texas, and then, you know, between Texas and Alabama, then it was Alabama, then he badmouthed Alabama, then it was LSU, then it was Georgia, then it was back to LSU, then it was back to Georgia, now it's to A&M. This guy has just been bouncing back and forth, especially with everything that is going on behind the scenes when, you know, he's getting in trouble with his coaches in high school. It's been a crazy commitment for a guy who is an uber talent, an insane talent.
Yeah, there was a point, you know, a year ago, even I thought he was the clear-cut number one player in the class. But it seems like it's been issue after issue after issue. And, you know, being a high school coach, I mean, you hear stuff that doesn't even make it all the way out, you know, to the media or doesn't even result in a public punishment. The thing is, it doesn't seem he wasn't like that. He wasn't like that a couple years ago. You know, I think as adults, sometimes, you know, we got to be careful. You know, sometimes we fill these kids' heads up, you know, we treat them.
Oh, yeah.
Especially here in Texas, you know. I mean, look at these stadiums these kids are playing in. Look at this. Even the high school I'm at, you got three different helmets. We put them on pedestals. And that's not always the best thing for them. Some of them can't always handle that. Some of them don't have the support system at home to keep them grounded, you know. Some, you know, kids mature at different rates. With Zach's case, I just hope it's a situation of him just being an immature young man. Like you say, his talent is undeniable. But, you know, football is just a game, and it's temporary. You know, at the end of the day, there'll be a day, you know, whether he gets injured or just, you know, over time, there'll come a day where you can't play anymore. You're going to have to ask yourself, what is your value to society, you know, when you're no longer, you know, an entertainer? What else is there can you do? You know, what else is there to you? And, you know, I just hope these players are able to remember that and keep that in mind. You know, this stuff is temporary and it's a privilege. So I hope the best for him, wish the best for him, you know, wherever he ends up. You know, I hope that he's able to keep his head on straight because, he's a joy to watch, you know, when he's got the ball in his hands. No question
about
that.
That's true. Here's the thing is Zach Evans is going through what a lot of guys in his position have gone through. Where even when they are four stars, when they are getting recruited by teams like Texas, by Alabama, by Texas A&M, Oklahoma, I've seen it with almost every guy where all of a sudden their phones are blowing up. You know, they have to get an entirely new phone that's, hey, this is the phone I give to friends and family. Yep. This is the phone I give to the media and coaches. And, you know, their phones blow up as soon as they hit basically junior year. And all of a sudden, they're getting told, hey, you're the greatest player in the nation. You're talking to guys like Tom Herman, Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Urban Meyer, Lincoln Riley, who are all telling you, man, you're so great. You're so awesome. You're the best. And it's hard for a kid, a high schooler, who is already in a position where they're likely a cocky asshole. Because as a high schoolers tend to be.
And don't even realize it. You know,
yeah,
it's not on them.
And then you're getting your head filled with that. And to keep your head level, to keep a level head when all of that is happening around you, when not just your high school coaches are telling you, while not just your friends are telling you, but guys who are on national television regularly, who are making millions of dollars regularly and are in the national spotlight are telling you, I want you to come here because you're great. It's hard to keep your head level. It's impossible.
No.
Unless you're a special kid. And that's the next guy is what has impressed me about Bijan Robinson. Because Bijan Robinson, aside from everything he's done on the field, has been one of the only guys who is a five-star who will make time for other people and go out of his way to make time for other people. when he committed to Texas, we had him on our show, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if you were on a show yet, but he came on. I reached out to him. I through other people, and I said, "Hey, would you like to come on our show? We would love to talk to you. We'd love to, you know, Longhorn fans to hear you." Knowing that usually when this happens with even 3-star guys, you rarely get a response. Mm-hmm. However, he found my number and he texted me and he said, "Hey, I would love to join your show." And he wrote me this wonderful text and just one of the most genuine kids I've talked to. And not just me, but I've heard this from multiple other people. Mm-hmm. And that was something that really kind of struck me as, man, this guy is different. This guy is very different because he has the talent he has. He's gone through what every 5-star has gone through, but he's kept his head level. Right? He's mm-hmm. not saying I'm the best player in the entire nation. Or maybe he is, but he's not saying I'm better than other people. I don't have time for other people. He's different.
No, I mean, I couldn't imagine because, not a lot of 16, 17, 18-year-olds, you know.
As mature as that?
No. I think part of that, I don't know what it's like living out in Arizona, but I know that they don't quite put their players or athletes on a pedestal like we do here in Texas or in the Metroplex too. We got some adults around here that are enablers, and I think they don't even realize it sometimes.
Yeah.
But no, to hear that about that kid is great. You know, the more kids you can get like that, the better. You know, the more guys you can get like that, the better, and the fewer problems you have. You hear about locker rooms and, you know, cultures, things like that. So no, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, it hasn't been since a guy like Caden Stearns that I've met a guy like that. Which is saying a lot because Caden Stearns has been one of my favorite recruits to ever follow. But John Robinson, aside from that, he didn't really play a lot in his All-Star game. He had 2 runs, one where it got completely stuffed for the beginning, but one where he bounced to the outside, he took a hit, he bounced off of that, and he kept on going. That dude, you know, from what little he showed, was very, very good.
He's a player I'm most excited about in the class. What I was most impressed about, I'm remembering back to seeing him at the Rivals 5-star. I didn't know the guy could run routes like that or that his hands were that smooth. He's a weapon. You know, I just, when I see him, he seems so smooth out there. You know, I can't think of the last time Texas had a guy coming in where like, oh my goodness, like, yeah, this is legitimately.
Jonathan Gray,
in my opinion, is not the same kind of athlete.
I don't know, dude. That guy was an all-timer coming out of high school.
He ran through some massive holes in high school.
If he didn't tear his Achilles, he would have been great.
I don't know, because I didn't think he was that amazing at Texas prior to the injury. I don't know. I'm just I don't think. Bijan Robinson is the best running back recruit I can remember coming in here since maybe just watching. I'm talking about just the way he moves with the ball.
Jamal Charles?
Yeah, like a Jamal Charles. Like a guy's just smooth like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's already 205, 210. He's coming in ready to play.
Yeah.
Even without going through the spring.
Yeah, I'm excited about him as well. And running back, as you said, is an easier position to get into the swing of things right away.
Plug and play.
Yeah. Another guy is my guy, Hudson Card. And I don't want to really say my guy, but the dude is good. He's a very accurate quarterback. He haven't really seen that since, you know, this might not come off as a great accolade, but since Shane Buechel. Shane Buechel was extremely accurate in high school. Same thing with Hudson Card. Hudson Card is a very accurate quarterback, and you saw that in the Under Armour All-American game. He had 2 touchdown passes that were both just beautiful dime balls. One was called back, but both of those passes and the other passes throughout the game, just a taste of what he has been able to do during his career at Lake Travis. You know, Lake Travis quarterbacks are often seen as, hey, this guy is a system quarterback, and that's been sort of the thing since Garrett Gilbert came and failed at Texas. But I think you've seen with Baker Mayfield, with Charlie Brewer, hey, Lake Travis has sort of taken on a new identity with their quarterbacks, and that is exactly what Hudson Card has done. He's taken on that identity of a guy who can escape the pocket and is very dangerous with his feet, but he's a better, more accurate passer than the guys who come before him.
Yeah, watching the game, you know, he's got a really quick release. I've never had any questions about Hudson Card and his, you know, his ability to be accurate. I wanted to see him on the field against, you know, some of the better athletes in the country, and I still thought he looked like a really good athlete. You know, Texas got a good one. I'm excited. I'm glad he's coming in early. I'm interested to see if he's able to put some heat on Casey Thompson. You know, in a way, aren't they kind of starting? It's not – Casey Thompson doesn't really have as big a leg up as you would think, because Texas has a new offensive coordinator coming in, you know. So, you know, I like Hudson Card a lot. I liked what I saw from him during the All-Star game. You know, he's got a look to him like a gamer. So, Texas definitely got a good one there for sure.
And with Hudson Card, that is, again, another great evaluation by the staff at the quarterback position early on. In 2019, the guy who everybody wanted – in the recruiting circles was Grant Tisdale. He was the guy who was being pushed and pushed and pushed. But Texas instead went after Rashawn Johnson, who turned out to be a much better take. And now, in 2020, it happened all over again. Hudson Card was picked over a guy, Malik Hornsby. And Malik Hornsby and Hudson Card's trajectories have gone exact opposite. Hudson Card has just absolutely taken off, and Malik Hornsby has kind of gone down a little bit. And you saw that in that game where Malik Hornsby wasn't able to rely on his athleticism as much as he was able to in high school. Hudson Card was leaps and bounds better. And that's just another great evaluation by Tom Herman at the quarterback position.
I do. That's a good point bringing that up. Yeah, I do remember the big deal being made of Tisdale on the message board a few years ago. And, yeah, with Malik Hornsby, it was an argument, Hornsby or Card, about a year ago at this time. Yeah, it makes sense. Malik Hornsby didn't throw a single pass in that Adidas All-American game. Every single time, he looked so uncomfortable. As soon as he took a snap, if his first read wasn't there, he was trying to take off. And, it was better athletes out there. He looked a little bit out of place. I agree with you on that. And yeah, that was awesome evaluation by the Texas staff. You got to give credit to Tim Beck there, don't you?
Yeah, for sure.
For both of those.
You're right. And the offensive line guys, Jake Majors was out there for a few snaps, and then Andres Karich, a guy who I really couldn't see on the field much. He wasn't on the field much. So let's go ahead and go to the defensive side of the ball here, and we'll start off with Vernon Broughton, who looked very good. He retained a lot of the explosiveness that we saw in his junior film, and the guy actually was very disruptive in the backfield.
Yeah, I thought he looked better. His senior tape isn't great, in my opinion. But, during that All-Star game, Broughton was one of the biggest guys out there, and his burst, he had two or three times where he was close. You know, he got a pressure on the quarterback. He's going to play next year. He's not going to be a starter, but he's going to be able to get into the rotation and contribute. And right. The more guys Texas can get like that, the better. But I was impressed with what I saw from Vernon Broughton during the Under Armour All-American game.
Yeah, and then you go to the secondary where you had Keaton Crawford. And Keaton Crawford, the one thing that I really liked about him at the beginning of the recruitment and one thing that kind of stayed throughout the recruitment is his versatility, the ability to play almost any secondary position on the field. And that's exactly what he did in the Under Armour All-American Bowl.
He played, like you mentioned, he played safety. He lined up in the nickel, in the slot cornerback. He lined up at the traditional boundary corner. Thing about Keaton, he looked a little bit bigger. He looked like he's about 185, 190 pounds. He's a physical guy. While a guy like Jalen Kimber, who's going to Georgia, might be longer, it wasn't a strong defensive back class in Texas this year.
Not at all.
Not at cornerback at all, at least. And I feel like Keaton – if Keaton wasn't the top cornerback available in state this year, he was easily one of the top two. And he's a guy that comes from East Texas. He doesn't have any ego. You know, he's tough. I'm excited for what he's going to do. Maybe not next year as a true freshman, but over the next, over his time in Austin, he's going to be a big-time contributor for the Longhorns.
Yeah, he played lights out, basically, which was very promising given how much I had built him up. Felt good for me.
Yeah, he can play.
So the next game, let's go to the next game. We're going on to the next game, the All-American Bowl or game or whatever it's called now. I don't know what it's called. We'll start off with Prince Dorba, who had a nice tackle and open space. but wasn't really out on the field too much, playing in a position he's likely to see more often when he's at Texas.
I thought Dorber looked awesome. I was really, really, really impressed with how comfortable and how fluid he looked, dropping back in coverage, playing in space. Our CJ Vogel was there during the week. He was sending videos and clips. Highland Park used Prince pretty much exclusively a defensive end with his hand in the ground to get after the quarterback.
Right.
I was aware that he was he's a basketball player. He's a really good basketball player. He just doesn't have the size to play at Division I level. But he was dropping back in coverage. He looked smooth. His head was on a swivel. And when he saw the quarterback break contain, he was able to stick his foot in the ground and explode up the field and make that open field tackle. If that's what that guy's going to look like, he's only about 210 right now. I think he'll eventually settle around the 230, 235 range. But if he can get up to about 215, 220, by next August, he'll be a guy that, worst case, contributes on special teams with the Longhorns. And, he was another – in another year where it was weak at his position in the state, he was one of the clear best.
Give me a quick refresher. Is he an early enrollee?
Prince Dorba is not an early enrollee, no.
He needs
Even
it.
Though he goes to Highland Park, no, he's not an early enrollee.
He would need it. But going on to the next guy who would potentially be going to Texas, in Alfred Collins. And I feel like the Alfred Collins recruitment has kind of flipped on its head multiple times. But the one thing that's been consistent is Texas has been close to the top. And I feel like now with Texas going to this four down front, with what they showed in the four down front in the bowl game, they have enough to really sell him. I mean, they've done everything to really just send him into the arms of every other team who's been come calling. But somehow they just keep on holding on to him because of his mom. He went to Texas and his proximity to home. Alfred Collins in this game, he looked good as a disruptor in the middle. Not as fast as I liked for him to be. Still decent, I think. What would you disagree with me, or would you agree?
Oh, in a game full of all-star athletes and, you know, quote-unquote five-star bodies, you know, future professional football players, I thought he looked like, you know, he looked like one of the monsters out there. He's one of the better-looking guys out
there. He was
huge.
He was big.
I thought he was a little bit out of position. I noticed him a few times. They had him lined up at the 4-3 defensive end out wide. He showed some solid get-off, you know, but I just – he's still at such an early stage in his development. You know, he's so long that – I think he's going to eventually be an interior guy, but no, you can still see flashes even out there on that field. There were times where he didn't get a sack, but he was, you know, half a second late. He was around the pile. There were times where he was chasing down in pursuit. I'm excited about him. I personally think he's the top defensive line prospect in the state in this year's class.
And the thing is that he's not getting a lot of great coaching in his high school for his position.
Yeah,
and I saw that when I went to go see him. He doesn't have the fundamentals for the position down yet.
That's a good thing, in my opinion, because he's got so much. He can get so much better. You know, he's already this impressive now. He can get so much better. I'll have my final rankings for 2020 out this Thursday. But the more I looked at the 2020 class as a whole, not just the Texas commits, the state of Texas as a whole, 2020, you know, the less excited I got about it, especially up top. You know, it seems like everybody's got a question mark, you know? You know, Damon Demons didn't play. He was ineligible this year. Zach Evans, you know, has his issues. Drew Sanders has never played just one position. You know, what will he look like settling in at one spot? You know, Jaquindon Jackson had the knee injury. You know, it seems like there are so many questions with so many guys. And, you know, I'm not in love with this 2020 class.
I'll tell you what I am in love with, that 2021 class.
2021
the
is a monster.
The offensive lineman of that 2021 class.
It's a monster. And, what's tomorrow? Tomorrow's Wednesday. Donovan Jackson is going to commit tomorrow. Today. I'm sorry. Don't get your hopes up on that one. I don't see that one happening. Mm-hmm. From all accounts, it's going to be Ohio State.
Texas has had issues getting Episcopal High School in Houston down.
Episcopal,
you know?
Yeah, seems like they didn't get any of those kids.
EHS.
So. Yeah, but for the fifth year in a row now, Ohio State's going to come in and get a top 10 player out of Texas. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what happens when you go to the college football playoff every other year.
It is what it is.
Well, we'll see if Texas can get there one day. But for now, that's been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, Where can we find you?
Y'all can find me on Twitter, DTERRELL05. Give me a shout. You know, I love to hear from you all.
Trying to pick any arguments this week?
Any arguments? I just thought about that. I'm trying to think. Any arguments this week? No, I haven't really seen any arguments. You know, my man Porzingis has been hurt, you know, so people can't complain about Porzingis right now. I don't care about what the Cowboys are doing right now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, no feelings on Mike McCarthy?
Mike McCarthy, you know, I was really interested. I saw a tweet from somebody. I didn't realize how well his resume stacks up with Sean Payton's. I didn't realize he was in Green Bay as long as he was. 05
Here's the thing,
2016.
Though, that Mike McCarthy is that no coach who has won a Super Bowl for one team has left and won for another. Not a single one.
Huh, I didn't know that, but I don't know if you can really. Well,
the guys there have been, I think, 11 in history, and not one of them has won with another team.
Well, no, I just Mike McCarthy, Cowboys. I never know what to expect with the Cowboys, man. But it was time for. I do know they needed to make a change. So you know, I don't know if he's the right guy, but I knew Jason Garrett was the wrong guy. So you know, hey, at least they did something. But
They gave the send off for Jason Garrett that they should have given for Jimmy Johnson.
No, they were holding Jason Garrett so he wouldn't hoping the Giants job got filled. So it's filled now, so he can go.
But all right,
the bricks,
on that
opinion.
Note, y'all, we're not a Cowboy show. Let's go,
Cowboys Nation, Mavericks Nation, Rangers Nation. Yes,
go Cards.
On the 4th and 5, Cardinals pretty good. I mean, hey, I don't. It's baseball. Rangers ain't never won nothing. I'm just here for support.
You're welcome for that one. On that note, y'all, you can find other shows like this on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on Podbean, Spotify, Google Play.
Hey, shout out to Dallas Anywhere. Stars, too. Dallas Stars. Stars Nation.
Go Blues.
Here. What else do I got? We got soccer, Dallas Sidekicks, FC Dallas. You know,
Austin FC.
All of that.
And St. Louis FC.
Frisco Rough Riders, you know, DeSoto Eagles, all that good stuff. That's what I'm, that's how I'm
St. Stephen Spartans.
Yeah. Who do they play? They play Deion. They play Trinity Christian?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay.
That's the home of Jared Allen.
Jared Allen, the Fro-Bro.
The Fro-Bro.
Himself. But all right, man. We're going to get
out of here, y'all. Thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.